It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in today for Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Later on, we'll take a look at a new bill coming up for a vote tomorrow that would take investigations of deaths that happen in police custody out of the hands of police.
But first, our next guest says that decisions made by six industries, including food, tobacco, and alcohol, have a greater impact on our health today than the decisions made by scientists and policymakers.
He says the profit-motivated practices of these industries correlates with the rise of non-communicable diseases and healthcare costs. And he says that if the United States and the world want to achieve their goals of better health for all, we need to reboot the system that values profits above public health.
Joining us right now is Nicholas Freudenberg. He is a professor of public health and the founder and the director of Corporations and Health Watch. His new book that we'll be discussing is Lethal But Legal, Corporations, Consumptions, and Protecting Public Health. Nicholas, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, and thanks for having me, Gene.
I want to talk about those six areas right away, because right in your book you say that you have friends and colleagues who said, why did you pick these, and why didn't you focus on more industries? You've taken a look at alcohol, the automobile industry, firearms, food and beverages, pharmaceuticals, and tobacco. Talk about the process and how you arrived at these particular six.
Sure. I think there are three reasons why I picked these six. First is that they're really mainstays of the global consumer economy. These six industries play an important role in what gets sold to consumers, and that's really the biggest part of the global economy. Consumer expenditures really drive the rest of the economy. Second, these six products are associated with the majority of deaths in the world today. The World Health Organization put out a report a few years ago saying that tobacco, alcohol, and unhealthy food were prime drivers of chronic illnesses, which now kill something like 60% of the people, account for 60% of the deaths in the world today. And I also think these six industries have been well studied, and so we really have ample evidence documenting their role in premature deaths and preventable illnesses and injuries. So I wanted to summarize what we know about them and really put on the public agenda, seeing if we can rebalance the responsibilities of individuals, government, and corporations for health.
So sort of the scope of the industries, their impact on the world, and then also that important fact that you mentioned there, the fact there's lots of data about it. They've got a history. There's been a lot written and a lot of research done.
Correct.
Now, one of the things you also mention in your book is that we are at what you call a turning point. And describe that turning point for us, if you will, and why now in this point in our history?
Yes, I think for the last 30 or 40 years, there's been a steady drift towards corporations taking more responsibility for political and economic decisions and governments stepping back from their responsibility, particularly to protect public health and the environment. And my fear is that we're reaching a point where the consequences of that freeing corporations to make decisions without public oversight is having a very dramatic effect on illness and health. Chronic diseases and injuries are now the leading killers in our society, and those two health conditions are closely linked to the six industries that I write about in the book.
And part of what you talk about in the book is what you call the corporate consumption complex. And talk about that concept, if you would.
Sure. By corporate consumption complex, I refer to the consumer corporations in these six and related industries, their trade associations, the law firms, the public relations firms, the scientists they hire, the media that they sponsor. And my argument is that this corporate consumption complex promotes what I call hyperconsumption, a pattern of lifestyle, health behaviors, and social environments that contribute to premature death and preventable illness. And the public health world needs to, and the social movements that are looking for a healthier, more sustainable world, in my view, need to take on this corporate consumption complex, which I borrowed from the term that Dwight Eisenhower used, the military-industrial complex, which he said in 1961 was a threat to our democracy and well-being. And my argument is today it's that corporate consumption complex which is undermining public health, threatening our democracy, and even jeopardizing the environment that sustains life.
And you say threatening our democracy, but it also has other governments are involved here too, right? We're not just talking the United States.
Absolutely. It's a global problem. And I think a closer look at tobacco illustrates that well. Tobacco, in some ways, is a success story. We've cut smoking rates in half. Many fewer people are dying tobacco-related deaths in the United States. But what the tobacco industry did as a result of those successes was to begin marketing its products in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. And the estimates are that 100 million people died prematurely because of tobacco in the 20th century, but that 1 billion people, 1 billion, will die prematurely in this century unless we dramatically change the promotion of tobacco and the uptake of it by people in the developing world.
And, you know, tobacco is an interesting example because here in the United States, smoking is on a slightly different track. You know, there are no smoking zones all over the place. But as you point out, in the rest of the world, tobacco is still very big and very much a going concern.
Yes, growing, in fact. The estimates are that something like a billion people, 1.3 billion people around the world are smoking. And that is just imposing a huge tax on productivity, on health care, and of course on human suffering, because the deaths from tobacco are terrible deaths, cancer and heart disease and other kinds of deaths.
So as you look at the other industries that you're focusing on, whether it's automobiles or alcohol, firearms, or what have you, are they sort of arriving at this consumption model all by themselves? Is there some sort of collusion here, or is it just the profits are driving everything and they're all winding up in the same place?
Well, I call it a complex because I think they do work together, and not in a secret conspiracy. It's not SMERSH, but rather they use the same public relations firms, the same lawyers, the same advertising agencies, and those supports that they use have found ways to exploit people's vulnerabilities. For example, people evolved with a craving for sugar, fat, and salt. And when we were in the savanna, that where we faced starvation, that then stoking up on these ingredients helped to ensure survival. But today, it leads to death and disease. But the food companies, to give one example, are exploiting that vulnerability and creating what some people call hyper-palatable products, products that are laced with sugar, fat, and salt to make it irresistible. And the brain signals that are triggered by some of these foods are not so different from the ones triggered by addictive substances like tobacco, alcohol, and illegal drugs.
We're talking with Nicholas Freudenberg, the author of Lethal But Legal, Corporations, Consumption, and Protecting Public Health. He says American industries have produced a culture that promotes consumption over well-being. And he further argues that needs to change. And we'd like to hear from you, too. What would you like to see done to challenge this model? Is this model, in your mind, a problem? Are you personally involved with any public health efforts that are taking on industries such as food, alcohol, or tobacco? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 if you'd like to join in. 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Nicholas Freudenberg, author of the book Lethal But Legal, and inviting you to join the conversation at 800-642-1234. We're talking about what he says the impact of industries such as food and alcohol and tobacco are. In fact, he says they have a greater impact on today's public health than decisions made by scientists and policymakers. Do you agree with that? 800-642-1234. 1234 is our toll-free number, and you can also post your comments on the Central Time Facebook page. Nicholas, before we take calls, we've got some lining up here. I did mention that spending on scientists and policymakers. How do you measure that? How can you come up with those numbers?
Well, there are fortunately organizations that tally the spending on campaign contributions and lobbying. And we know there's been a huge increase, especially after the Supreme Court Citizen United decision. And one of the problems have been we have the most corporate-friendly Supreme Court in the last several decades now. One number that always shocks me is that each year the tobacco, alcohol, and food industries spend about $25 billion trying to encourage people to use their mostly unhealthy products. And that is more than twice our total expenditure for all the activities of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. So we're spending far more in this society on encouraging people to be unhealthy than we are in promoting public health. And that doesn't make sense. That's not a moral or ethical approach, and government really has a responsibility to better protect the well-being of our population.
You know, when you went into this book, I imagine you had a thesis that this would be the case, and I'm wondering if you were surprised by what you found.
Well, here's what surprised me. We always thought of the tobacco industry as a pariah industry, and what I found is that while the products of the food industry and the pharmaceutical industry, for example, are quite different because we need food, we need drugs, the strategies they use actually follow the playbook of the tobacco industry. And they misrepresent science, they discredit critics and opponents, they try and dominate the media, they lobby extensively, they undermine legislation that looks to protect public health. And so that was very disturbing, that the tobacco industry has written the playbook for corporate America for this period.
Let's go to the phones now. We've got listeners who would like to join in. We begin with Ben, and Ben joins us from Fenimore. Hi.
Hi. I'm just touching on the whole America thing. It's America. It's a free country, and, you know, I don't smoke, I don't chew or anything like that, but you know, I do support not smoking in the bars and all that stuff. But as far as restricting people on, you know, telling them, you know, don't smoke or forcing them not to smoke, backing them into that corner, to me it ain't right. You know, it's a free country. It's do what you want, you know. I mean, as long as you're not harming other people, I don't see any harm in it.
Ben, thanks for the call. And what about that argument, Nicholas, that this is America, this is a free country, and people should be able to make their own rational decisions about what they choose to do?
Yes, I'm very much welcome the fact that we live in a free country. And I'm all for individuals taking responsibility for their health. But I think then we also need to put a demand on corporations that they take responsibility. And no one and is talking about prohibiting tobacco, about prohibiting unhealthy food or alcohol. What I'm raising the question of is how much do we want to let corporations promote their use? How much do we want to have social resources spent encouraging people to use products that will contribute to premature illness and terrible deaths? And I think actually no parent wants to see their child addicted. No parent wants to have their children be at risk of diabetes or lung cancer or other terrible diseases. And so they're looking to government to protect their children, to protect young people from the undue influence that I think these industries are having.
So how fine a line is that if what you're worried about here is that promotion? Because then you start treading on some very American things like the First Amendment.
Well, the First Amendment only recently was extended to protect commercial speech. That was a decision in the 1970s, and before that time, it was seen correctly, I believe, as protecting political speech. Now that right has also been extended to corporations. But Oliver Wendell Holmes said, the First Amendment does not give people the right to yell fire falsely in a crowded theater. And to my mind, making false health claims about products like foods and alcohol and tobacco is a slow-motion version of falsely yelling fire in a crowded theater.
Let's go back to the phones right now. Jeff is with us, and Jeff is in Madison. Hi.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. I certainly share your guest concerns regarding the marketing tactics of tobacco companies, alcohol, what have you, but I guess I'm wondering what are we going to do to protect us now that we're legalizing marijuana in more and more states? What is to protect us from, I'll call it marijuana companies, using the same marketing tactics to drive more and more of us to become addicted on what has proven to be a very addictive substance?
Nicholas Freudenberg, I don't know if you, this is not addressed in your book, I don't think, but what about that idea that there are other things out there, say the legalization of marijuana, that could fall right into this same sort of playbook? Is this?
Yes, I worry about that too. I support the decriminalization of our approach to substance abuse and addiction and moving it more into a public health model. But I think what the problem is promoting substances that undermine health with inadequate government oversight. Everyone agrees that the government has some responsibilities for oversight. Nobody is arguing for distributing heroin to children. So the question that we debate is where to draw the line. And I think what we've seen in the last 30, 40 years is moving that line steadily rightward to letting corporations do whatever they want with immunity. And when the costs of that are borne by their consumers and by citizens and by taxpayers, that doesn't seem right. So I think we need to rebalance that line so that there's a higher degree of responsibility on the part of corporations for the costs that the products that they promote impose on individuals and on society as a whole.
So how do you go about doing that? You know, taking on any one of these particular industries, it seems to me, would be a daunting task. And then you combine them all into this overarching messaging issue, and it seems impossible. So how do you create something that's going to address all of these concerns with all of these various industries? And the trick, I think, might be, how do you do it in a way where it would ultimately be successful?
Yes, I think that is the challenge. But I'm optimistic for a few reasons. I'm optimistic because I think we've seen in American history that several times in the last century or so, the American people, scientists, journalists, reform movements have come together to redraw the lines between corporation and government and the public. And I think we're entering a time where people will see the necessity of doing that. I'm also optimistic because I think most people want a society where they don't have to worry about their child's health, want a society where they can count on the government to protect their health against false claims, misleading claims, and so on. And I think if we look at the food movement that has been emerging over the last several years, more and more Americans are saying we want healthy food. We want to move away from this industrialized food system. It took 50 years to get public action on tobacco, so it's not going to be overnight. But I think our success in tobacco shows that you can mobilize people with a combination of evidence and good arguments and plain old community organizing.
And so in your estimation, what would a good policy agenda look like if you're going to accomplish those goals and, I guess, taking the long view, do it over a period of time?
Yes. In the book, I recommend five or six strategies. The first is to develop stronger right-to-know and duty-to-disclose laws, right-to-know for consumers, duty-to-disclose for companies. If they know that one of their products is harming people, they ought to have an obligation to disclose that. That isn't the case today. Second, we ought to no longer allow corporations to pass on to consumers and taxpayers the health costs that their products generate. We saw in the tobacco settlement of 1998 that the tobacco industry had to pay billions of dollars to state governments to compensate the public for what we had to pay for taking care of people with tobacco-related diseases. Third, I think we need to really stop marketing particularly unhealthy products to children. Several other free market societies have found that it isn't fair and doesn't make sense to advertise unhealthy products to children. And finally, we need to do a better job of leveling the playing field. Corporations really have an undue influence in our political system through lobbying and campaign contributions and revolving door, and we need to fix those gaps in our democracy so that ordinary people have a stronger voice in setting government health policy.
We've only got about 30 seconds left, but are you optimistic that, something will happen, that this discussion will take place?
Yes, I think it's happening all around the country. I think food is a very clear example. I think a lot of people are looking at the role of the pharmaceutical industry, and I also think there's action around the world. So I'm optimistic that people will be concerned about their own health, the future health of the planet, and that they will act to prevent the terrible future of our children dying sooner than our current generation does.
Nicholas, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Nicholas Freudenberg is a professor of public health and the founder and director of Corporations and Health Watch. His new book is Lethal But Legal: Corporations, Consumptions, and Protecting Public Health.